Mesechus Kinim is challenging mathematically by reputation for two reasons. There are Mishnayot that require some concentration on the computation. In other words, just to follow the numbers through the Mishnah, the birds and where they are and what you've done and so on, is computationally requires a little bit of attention. There are also Mishnayot, predominantly in the third parak, one or two or three Mishnayot, that are conceptually complicated. In other words, the concept behind the Mishnah requires some thinking, and whatever the, sometimes it's in the way the Tanna formulated it, sometimes it's in the way the Rishonim addressed the Mishnah. We'll deal with some of the computational complexity, we'll deal throughout, because that's going to come up predominantly both in the second and the third parak. The first parak, fortunately, is relatively straightforward, and then some of the conceptual complexity will come up in the third parak. Beyond all of that, the other thing which makes Kinim a little bit difficult is the case. Sometimes you will see that there are disagreements as to exactly what case is being addressed in the Mishnah. We will try really to avoid most of the case-related, circumstance-related arguments, and we'll probably just illustrate the Mishnayot with the usual case. We'll follow, for the most part, the explanation of the Rush and the Balamar, which sort of the mainline explanation that many follow in Meseches Kinim. Just to note, the Rambam's explanation of the entire Masechta is entirely different. Few times we'll make reference to some of those what some of those differences are, without trying to explain the Rambam's rationale. The Ravid explains the second parak differently, in a more detailed computational reasons, as opposed to conceptual reasons. We'll mention them, but they also will avoid them. The third parak is where there is probably the largest number of different explanations among the various Rishonim and Achronim commenting on the Masechta. The third parak is hard enough to learn in any particular way. We're going to basically just learn the third parak with one consistent interpretation and be done with it. You can spend a lot of time looking at the various ways the individual Mishnayot in the third parak are addressed by different Rishonim. So that's basically an overview. The third parak, for that reason, is the hardest, and as a result, we'll try to gain some time by moving into the second parak a little bit today, and then tomorrow moving into the third parak to sort of divide the difficulty in dealing with the Masechta into roughly three even parts. So with that, let's start. To start, we have to understand that we're talking about bird sacrifices. And bird sacrifices come in two varieties. There is what's called a chova, an obligation. Who's obligated to bring bird sacrifices? Well, the most common obligation, hence the Mishnah typically says Isha, is a woman giving birth. She has to bring a chatas and an ola, more accurately, an even number of chataot and ola. Olot. As well as the woman, a zava, nazir, mitzora, there are a variety of other people who can be obligated to bring a chova, but since woman is the most common case, that's the case that we will that the Mishnah typically deals with. A chova itself comes in two varieties. It comes in what's called a kan meforeshes, a designated nest, and a kan stuma, a unspecified nest. The difference being that when are the chataot and olot specified? So if you do it at the beginning, if the woman on establishment of the nest, she says, these three birds are chataot, these three birds are olot, that's called a kan mefareshet. If she doesn't do it then you have no chance to be mefaresh, which birds are olot and chataot, until the kohen actually does the sacrifice. So mefareshet, in the context that we're going to be learning, is at the very beginning. The woman initially designates. If she doesn't designate it in the middle, she can't come around a day later and say, you know what, I'm going to tag three birds as chataot and three birds as olot. The only person who can do that is the kohen during the sacrifice. He does sacrifice correctly three olot and three chataot. But the woman, to make a kam mefareshet, must do that at the beginning. The other case, which is the case that we will deal with more commonly in the Masechta, is a kanstuma, where the woman doesn't say which birds are chataot and which birds are alot. She simply hands the kohen an even number of birds and says, sacrifice them appropriately, half as chataot and half as olot. So that's chova, vereshet stuma. The other possibility is when birds are not a chov, an obligation, but they're given free willingly. In other words, you donate and you say, I'm going to bring birds as sacrifice. In that case, the only types of birds that you can bring, you can only bring olot, and you can bring olot, as we'll see, either in a neder or in a dava. And in that case, you create a set of olot that have to be sacrificed. And that's what the Mishnayot are going to deal with. Okay, now we can go inside. Chatas ha'of nasas lamala v'chatas behema lamala. So why do we care about which bird is a chatas, which bird is an ola? Because a chatas and an ola, the process of sacrifice is entirely different. Now, there are many differences. What can be eaten, where they're sacrificed. There are a variety of differences between a chatas and an ola. The major difference that we're going to be dealing with is where is the blood sprinkled. So the Mishnah says, Chatas Ov Nasas Lamala, the blood of the Ov is sprinkled below what's called the Chut HaSkira, or the line around the middle of the Mizbeach. V'chatas Behema Lamala, the blood of a Behema Chatas is sprinkled above. Olas Ov Nasas Lamala, V'olas B'ha Behema Lamata. And Ola has done exactly the opposite. The blood of the Ola is sprinkled above the Chut HaSkira. The blood of the Behema is sprinkled below the Chut HaSkira. And again, why is this important? Nishina bazeh bazeh, possible. If you were to mix this up, the carbonate are possible. Seder akinim kachu. What is kinim all about? A chova echor chatas ve'echor ola. A chova doesn't necessarily mean one, an even number of chataot and olot. B'nedarim minedavos kulam olos. Nedarim minedavos, as we said, are all olos. Ezu neder horma reale ola. If he says, I will bring an ola, that's a neder, meaning he is personally obligated, a so-called, chovas gavra. Ve'ezu nedava horma hare zu ola. That's a creates a heftza. He creates a nest of birds that are have to be brought as olot. Mabe nedarim ledavos. We know el nedarim meso nigvu chayev makriusam. If I make a neder and I say, if I make a neder that I'm going to bring birds sacrifice, I'm responsible to bring birds. If the birds I designate first get lost, I got to bring other birds. But if I make a nedava, if I actually specify this particular bird is going to be a sacrifice, if it gets lost, then I'm not chayev I am not chayev to replace the bird. Okay, that's halachas. Really belong in a different masech, nedarim and davos. Now let's go to what the masech is about, which is now you've created either a chova mifereshes or a chova stuma, or you've created what we will refer to subsequently as in the dava, a group of olot. What happens when these things become mixed up? So next, Mishnah Chatas is arva ba'ola. How do you have a chatas? Let's say that I created a kohen with two birds, a chatas and ola. The kohen sacrificed one of the chatas, the ola, and now there's a chatas left. And the kohen knows this bird's supposed to be a chatas. There's no tag on the bird anymore. The kohen's about to sacrifice it. The bird escapes, flies off, and flies into a nest of olos. So chatas in zarva ba'ola. V'ola b'chatas, or the other case, there's an ola, there's a nest of olos. That's easier to imagine how it arrives, because a nedava can create olos. It gets mixed up with a chatas, afilu echa beribo. It doesn't matter, a chatas and an ola get mixed up. It doesn't matter how many are birds involved, yamusu chulam, they all die. If you can't tell the chatas from the ola, you can't sacrifice anything. You have a thousand olos, one chatas finds its way into the nest with a thousand olos, you can't pull it out, you don't know which one it is, you can't bring a single ola, because any bird you sacrifice as an ola, maybe that chatas, you clearly can't bring a chatas, because you've got a thousand olos here. Very likely, if you bring a chatas from just an arbitrary bird, you're definitely doing it, or you're almost definitely doing it wrong. But even in the case where you're almost definitely doing it right, i.e. one chatas and a thousand olas, you can't bring an ola either. Okay, that's the case. Then when it comes to kinim, we don't talk about miramatsi, we talk about absolute certainty. You cannot do anything that is as even the slightest possibility of not being correct. And this halacha nobody disagrees with. This is a universally accepted halacha. The next halacha, chatas shenis arva b'chova. Now, let's take a case where you have a chatas. Let's do an example. Let's assume you have two chataot. You have two birds that are chataot. And they get mixed into a chova. Let's say the chova has six birds. So you now have two birds, chataot, mixed into six birds in a chova. What does the Mishnah say? Ein kosher ela kamin chataot shebechova. All you can do is you can sacrifice the number of chataot that were in the chova. In the example, we're using three birds. So of the eight birds, five birds left to die. Three birds sacrificed as chataot. Why is that? Well, it's obvious. Well, I can't bring an ola at all because any bird that I sacrifice may be one of those two chataot. I can't tell the eight birds apart. So I certainly can't bring an ola. Okay, so I bring a chatas. I can bring three chataot. I can't bring a fourth. Why can't I bring four? Because if I bring a fourth chatas, then maybe all four birds that I bring come from the six. So the six is only supposed to provide three chataot and three olot. If I sacrifice a fourth bird as a chatas, you know, you might argue, well, you know, you have two, maybe it's from one of those two. Again, we don't use any probability. If there's a possibility that I'm doing something incorrect, I'm not allowed to do it. So three chataot, I absolutely know I did nothing incorrect. Because why? The chova was required to bring three. Two chataot obviously should be brought as chataot. So no matter what I do by bringing three, I'm doing the right thing. Then, of course, v'chein olah shenis arva b'chova, ein kosher ela k'minyan olah shebechova. Same thing, two olot get mixed in with the chova of size six, three olot are brought. Bein shachova merubah v'anadav muwetes. Doesn't matter if the chova is very large. 20 birds in the chova, one ola sneaks in, I bring 10 olot, half of the chova. So that's a case where I lose only of the 21 birds, I lose 11. Bein sha nadav meruba. I have a huge nadav. I have 30 olot. And I have this little nest with two chovot. And all 32 of these birds somehow get mixed together. So now what am I allowed to do? 30 olot, two in a chova, I bring exactly one ola. Because if I were to bring a second bird, they could both be, as an ola, I couldn't bring a chatas because very likely is one of those olot. But if I were to bring two olot, even though, you know, probability is that those two olot should be valid, but chances, you know, there's a slight chance that both of those olot come from the chova, and those are disallowed. This is one of the most important mishnayot. This basically sets the principle that with respect to bringing birds, in when you consult, the answer that you're going to get is please do not do anything that is in any way possibly, no matter how remote that possibility, it cannot be wrong. Now, just to mention, this is the halacha on which the Rambam disagrees. And if you look in the Rambam, in Psula Mikdashim, the 8th Parak, this is a place where the Rambam says, V'ye royali, which means that the Rambam cannot prove this, but this is his intuition, that it, let's take our case with two olot and a chov of size 6, so we said 3 birds olot, 5 birds to waste. You have to just sit to wait to die. The Rambam says in that case you bring 8 birds as olot and 5 are valid. Very difficult. Rambam, clearly, you will see as we learn the entire Masechta, you will not see that suggestion anywhere in the Masechta. So why the Rambam says that, what his principles are, why does he go against what would appear to be the explicit language of the Mishnah, topic for a different day. But this Mishnah, we will continue to learn as if this Rambam doesn't exist. We're not going to try to deal with it. We're going to deal with the notion that if there is any possibility of doing something wrong, you're not allowed to do it. A chova must be sacrificed, ola chatas. You can't sacrifice more than 3 olos because the 4th olo you sacrifice may be a bird that should be a chatas. Okay, now we get to a slightly harder case. Bamed devar mamurim b'chov v'nedava. Oh, I was talking about a set of olot or chataot that mix into a chova. What about chovesh nishar v'zobazu? What about 2 chovar? I, Rachel and Leah, each have a nest. And those nests get mixed up. Achas lezu, achas doesn't mean one bird, it means one pair of birds. Achas lezu, shtayim lezu, shtayim lezu. Each woman has 4 birds, 6 birds, shalosh lezu, shalosh lezu. What's the halacha? Mechtza kasher, mechtza pasul. If an even number of birds belonging, say, to 2 women, we'll see that there are other cases as well, but let's take the simple case. Rachel and Leah each have 6 birds. There's now a nest of 12 birds. What's the halacha? You bring exactly 6 birds. Why? Because clearly, Rachel had to bring 3 olot, Leah had to bring 3 olot. So you bring 3 olot. Rachel had to bring 3 chataot, Leah had to bring 3 chataot. You bring 3 chataot. So far, 6 birds, perfect. Nothing can go wrong. Bring a 7th bird, what could happen? Well, now life can get more complicated. If you bring a seventh bird, say now you have 4 olot, and you were going to bring 4 olot and 4 chataot, it has to be even, right? So you bring 4 olot and 4 chataot, it's possible that all 4 of those olot, none of them come from Leah, they're all Rachel's. And what is Rachel supposed to be doing? 3 olot, 3 chataot. She's doing something wrong is happening. So one of Rachel's birds that should be brought as a chatas is being brought as an olot. Do nothing wrong. The explanation in the Mishnah, bring 3 chataot and 3 olot, and then that's it. The other 6 birds have to be left to die, and the women then jointly bring another 6 birds together, and they fulfill their obligation. So that's the case, mechtze kasher, mechtze pasul. Achach lezu, shtayim lezu, shalosh lezu, v'esr lezu, me'el lezu. Now you have 2, 4, 6, 20, and 100 birds. 232 birds altogether. Remember that number because this is the Mishnah that's going to come back in the 3rd parak, which I hope we will get to tomorrow, which is among the more complex Mishnos in the 3rd parak. In this parak, it's pretty straightforward. Bein mishem echad, bein mishnei shemus. It doesn't matter. We'll see what this means more in the next Mishnah, whether all of these chavot were for the same reason, leida, ziva, or whether they were for one shame or 2 shame, bein miisha achas, bein mishtei nashim, doesn't matter. What the circumstance, hamuat kasher. The only thing that's kasher is the smallest group. Meaning, of the 232 birds in the Mishnah's example, you can bring exactly 2 birds. 230 birds in the example, leave them to die. Why? Because if you brought more than 2 birds, then it's theoretically possible, unlikely, but possible, that if you bring more than 2 birds, let's say you bring 2 and 2, that the 2 birds that you bring as, say, an ola, both come from the same nest. So by the principle, you're not allowed to do something that could potentially be incorrect. You must stop after 2 birds. Now, In the third parak, when we revisit this Mishnah, we will see what happens in a case. The third parak is about no consultation. Somehow the birds get sacrificed. You know, we'll deal with exactly what that means, but that's the third parak. In our parak, the first parak, which is really quite a bit simpler, the person asks, consults, and the halacha is very simple. Sacrifice two, the other 230 birds cannot be sacrificed. The last Mishnah is not the is straightforward. Ketzad Mishem Echa, what does Mishem Echa mean? Leda v'leda, ziva v'ziva. Both birds are for the same purpose. Mishnei Shemos, Leda v'ziva, Ketzad Shteinashim, Azu Leda, Azu Ziva, Mishem Echad. Mishnei Shemos, Azu Leda v'Azu Ziva. So all the possibilities. You can either have, you know, you can have multiple women, you can have multiple reasons. In any case, these chovot were established independently, and when you establish chovot independently, you'll see in the next few words that you don't have to do that. In other words, this is, you know, after the fact. Once you establish a chova, that chova is established. Says Rabbi Yossi, to give you the opposite extreme to what we've been learning up till now, and I don't want to go into the halachic complex. Rabbi Yossi does not hold from Breira, so this halacha has to apply even if you don't hold Breira. Rabbi Yossi says that, yes, if the women bring separate chovot, and they get intermingled, the halachas I just told you apply. But they don't have to do that. Because he says, Shtei Nashim Shlachu Kineim Be'erev. Let's say they took their kinos together. Oshin Nashim to make Kineim Lekoin. They didn't even make a Kohen. They gave the Kohen money to buy four birds. Le'ezhi Yitzha Kohen Yachiv Chatos, Le'ezhi Yitzha Kohen Yachiv Ola. The Kohen is allowed to create and sacrifice a chova for as many obligations as the women decide. So if the women have two obligations, each one gave birth, they don't have to create a chova for Rachel and a chova for Leah. They can give the Kohen money to buy four birds, or more birds if they'd like, and he sacrifices however he sacrifices, two and two, and both women get credit. So this is, if you'd like, the opposite of the case we just described, because here the birds, the chova, the nests, were not created initially. They were created by the Kohen, and what Rabbi Yossi is telling us is that you can create nests. You don't have to individually create nests. You can create nests that apply to multiple obligations. Okay, that's the first parak. On to the second parak. Kan stuma sheparach mimena gozul avir sheparach bein amesos o shemesach mehem yikach zug lasheni. You have a kan stuma and a bird flies away. It flies into a group of birds that are going to get killed, or it itself dies. Take a second bird. Why is now? By the way, kan stuma here is a fil kan stuma. It's happened to a common for reshes. We the same halacha, but in a kan stuma, as we'll see in this perek, there is some sort of a connection between the two birds. You know, the bird A and bird B, even though I'm a chatas and you're an ola, they are somehow in a kan stuma link because they're supposed to be, sacrificed in opposite ways. Common for reshes, you can argue, I'm designated a chatas, you're designated an ola, so we're two separate individuals. So obviously, if one of us flies away, you bring another bird, you designate it the way you designate it, and you go home. Kanstuma, you could maybe have thought that there is some connection between me and you because we're supposed to be sacrificed differently. Mishnah says, no, don't worry about it. A bird disappears, take a second bird, and go home. Okay, now that's the simple case. Parach lebena krevos, if a bird flies, one bird flies from nest A into nest B, we'll call the women Rachel and Leah, so the bird flies from Rachel's nest to Leah's nest. Parach lebena krevos, puzzle. The bird is puzzle. We'll see what that means. This is the Mishnah. The next Mishnah will explain this Mishnah. So we'll just read the words. Uposel echet connecto. So ostensibly what this says is it is puzzle, and one additional bird is puzzled because of it. Or posel. So net net, when a bird flies away, how many birds are possible? So when a bird flies, two birds are disqualified. Okay. Why? Go to the next Mishnah. Ketzad, shtei nashim. There are two women. Lezu shtei kinim. This one has two kinim, meaning a kan, say, of size 4. Lezu shtei kinim. This one has a kan of size 4. So each woman has a nest of size 4. Rachel has 4, Leah has 4. Parach mezo lezo, a bird flies from, say, Rachel to Leah. So how many birds now are in Rachel's nest? 3 birds. How many birds are in Leah's nest? 5 birds. Posel echad balichaso. He, in addition to him, that bird being posel, whatever that means, we'll see what this means practically in a minute. Posel achad balichaso, a second bird is also disqualified. Chazar. Let's say the bird now returns. One of the 5 goes back into Rachel's nest. And now, you know, if you didn't tell anybody, you know, you have 4 birds in each nest. What happens? Postel echad b'chazirasa. Not just is it pasul, we'll see again what that means, but it also disqualifies. So now, in theory, 4 birds have been disqualified. Parah v'chazar lo'iv z'klum. Now, if they continue to fly back and forth, it doesn't get worse than 4 birds are still always going to end up kosher. There were 4 initially, 4 initially. One flew, 3, 5. 2 are pusle. 1 flew back, 4, 4. 2 are pusle in each nest. That's what I'm just reading the words. We're just trying this. And by the way, I'm reading the words according to the Rush and the Balamar. We'll see that we can even read the words differently, but let's stay with the Rush and the Balamar. Just reading the words, and we'll come to the explanation shortly. If after, I now am 4 and 4, so at that point, by what the Mishnah seems to say, I have only 2 valid birds in each nest. Now they keep flying back and forth between nests. After an even number of flights, there are again 4 and 4. Ostensibly, always 2 birds in each nest are kosher, because even if they were totally intermingled, case in the previous parak we just learned, 4 birds get mixed in with 4 birds. How many are kosher of the 8? 4 are kosher. So same principle applied to this case. Okay, that's the Mishnah. I'm going to try now to explain the Mishnah according to the predominant explanation, and I'll mention to you that there are other explanations as well. Both the Rambam and Ravid, who completely disagree about this Mishnah, happen to read the words and the halachic rule the same way. But we're going to leave that for a few minutes. Let's deal with the Mishnah exactly as it's the normal, and I'll call it the standard interpretation, or the more usual interpretation. So let's start at the beginning. Rachel has 4 birds. One of his 4 birds ends up in Leah's nest. She has 3 birds. Leah has 4, has 5 birds. So what would happen if it just stopped there and then we're flying? At that point, Rachel and Leah come to and say, what should we do? Cohen, the rabbi, I'm not sure who they go to. But they go to somebody in authority, and they say, what should we do? And the person will say to them, Rachel, I got bad news for you. Your bird is sitting over there, it's puzzle. You get no value from your bird. Not just that, take another bird from your nest and put it out the pastures until it dies. So you only have 2 birds in your nest. Take those 2 birds, give them to the Cohen as a chova, buy another 2 birds separately, keyword separately, and bring those 2 birds. And now your obligation is done. Leah, I've got good news for you. Yeah. No, you know, no loss. Take one of the birds, I don't care which one, put it aside. Not even clear to me. Nothing is at that point. Just put it aside for the time being. Sacrifice the other 4, and you're good to go. The 4 birds that you have, even though possibly one of the 4 birds you sacrificed belonged to Rachel, we don't care. 2 chatas, 2 olas for you, Leah. One of the birds put aside. You're done. you're done, you're both done, the loss entirely accrued to Rachel. Bird now flies back, one of the five birds in Leah's nest flies back to Rachel. We say to Rachel, to Leah, Leah, you lost the bird? Okay, right? So, potentially, you have your bird that you put aside, right? You had one bird aside already. When a bird flies back, you're also down to two birds. So you now have to have put aside a bird after the first flight. When the second bird flies back, you're also down to two birds. So both Rachel and Leah are down to two birds. Now, let's try to understand why. Let's take the simple case. Rachel loses a bird, and it flies into Leah's nest. Three birds are left in Rachel's nest. So what would Rachel do if she, you know, didn't learn the Masechta? She would, you know, she wasn't going to ask any questions. She would say, who cares where my bird went? It's gone. What am I going to do? I go out to the bird store, buy another bird. I have four birds. Give the four birds to the Kohen. The Kohen sacrifices the four birds, and I'm good to go. Halacha says you can't do that. Why? Because when you do that, what have you done? Your three initial birds, two were sacrificed as olot, one was sacrificed as a chatas, and the fourth bird was sacrificed as a chatas. It doesn't matter. It could be that two of your original birds were sacrificed as a chatas, third of your original bird is an olot, and the new bird is an olot. But let's take one case. It doesn't matter. The cases are entirely parallel. Two of your birds are olot, one of your birds are chataot, the new bird is a chatas. Okay, so you sacrificed two olot. What happened to the bird once you've sacrificed two olot? What are you obligated to do at that point? You're obligated to bring your other two birds as what? As chataot. So where are your other two birds? One is sitting in Leah's nest. Ooh, Leah, you have a real problem. A bird that is designated implicitly because Rachel sacrificed two birds as olot, she created two birds in her nest that must be brought as chataot. Guess what? One of those birds is now sitting in your nest, Leah. I got bad news for you. We just finished learning in the first parak. A chatas flies into a nest of four birds. How many birds are kosher? Two. You can only bring two birds, es chataot. Three of your birds are gone. So were Rachel to sacrifice three of her original birds, then Leah would lose three birds. So Leah would have to go out, Rachel would go out and buy a bird, and Leah would buy two birds. In total, a total of three birds would be lost. So ostensibly, I'm not going to go into the logic. Is it because they're trying to minimize the number of birds? It doesn't matter. The principle is pretty clear. According to these Rishonim, if Rachel sacrifices two birds, then by the principles of she must bring two birds as chataot and two birds as olot, if she sacrifices two birds as olot, then one of the five birds sitting in Leah's nest is a chatas, because it has to be brought as a chatas. And by the halachas we learned, Leah would lose three of the five birds in her nest, and she can only bring two birds. One, she can only bring two birds as chataot, and the other bird she would have to, you know, get rid of, then buy two. She'd have to buy two additional birds in addition to the bird that Rachel bought. So three birds would be bought. So since the halacha is what? That only two birds are lost? It must mean that Rachel is constrained. That's the way that the majority of Mefarshim learned this particular Mishnah. When the bird flies back, same thing happens. Same thing happens. If the bird flies back, now I put one of the birds in Leah's nest aside, and the bird flies back. I don't know what bird I put aside. I could have put one of Leah's birds aside. I could have put Rachel's birds aside. But when a bird flies back, there are now three birds left in Leah's nest. Same logic. If I allowed her to sacrifice her three birds, adding one bird to her nest, then she's done exactly the same thing in reverse to Rachel. So she's restricted to only two birds. And that's the way the Mishnah is explained by a majority of Mepharshim. Now, the difficulty with this explanation, we'll get to it tomorrow when we deal with the next Mishnah. There is some difficulty with this explanation. Because, first, the explanation appears to be a bit utilitarian, but that's really not the issue I'm going to deal with. The difficulty, I believe, that the Rambam and the Ravid both have with this explanation is that it doesn't sound correct, given the wording of the Mishnah. The Mishnah seems to imply, and again, I clearly, since most Mepharshim don't agree, they obviously don't agree, but the Rambam and Ravid seem not to like this sort of an explanation, because you would think that one bird was lost to each woman. So, ostensibly, if it stopped with a bird from Rachel going to Leah, then ostensibly what you would think should happen, you would argue, is that each woman adds a bird. Rachel adds a bird because her bird is gone. Leah adds a bird. There's four birds here. There's six birds here. Rachel sacrifices two and two and gets credit for four. Leah, for reasons I won't go into, sacrifices three and three and gets credit only for two. That is, at the end of the day, when you look carefully at the Ravid and the Rambam, for reasons, again, we won't go into, that's the way they interpret the Mishnah, very differently than the majority. The majority interpret the Mishnah, Rachel has a second loss, Leah throws out a bird and sacrifices four, Rachel sacrifices two, and remember I said, adds two separately. She can't just add four together, because if she added four together, then if she didn't know the new birds from the original two, she can aren again. There's, you know, maybe two original got sacrifices Olo, she would again create a problem for Leah. So Rachel is very restricted. She sacrifices two other, and Leah is good to go. Rambam and Ravid learn the Mishnah very differently. They learn the Mishnah again. Now, the Ravid learns the Mishnah, I can just tell you, he says the Mishnah is dealing with an entirely different circumstance. And we'll describe the circumstance in the third shir, when we get to the third parak. The Ravid says that the circumstance in this Mishnah is like the circumstance in the third parak. You can separately, we're not going to go back to this Mishnah, you can try to work out the Ravid via the principles of the third parak. And I will tell you that if you do it carefully, and this requires a lot of pencil and paper, it will turn out that the Ravid's explanation is really, really, you know, it's ironclad. It is a really sharp explanation. The problem is that he is assuming a circumstance that we first get to in the third parak. So you have to get into a whole conversation as to if the Mishnah, as we'll see in the third parak, raises a different circumstance, how can a Mishnah before that refer to that circumstance? That's the complexity with the Ravid. But the halachic rule and the mathematics, and particularly the Mishnah we'll cover tomorrow with all the flying birds, all of that works perfectly according to the Ravid's explanation, though we won't go into any of that detail. The Rambam is more fascinating, because the Rambam does not say anywhere that this is after the fact. The Rambam, he sort of hinted in the first parak, somehow allows the woman in the second group to sacrifice, even though there is a ostensibly bird designated in her nest. So the Rambam says that Rachel adds the bird sacrifices. So by what we described, you would think that one of the birds, let's say Rachel sacrifices again, her two original birds is Olot, and the new bird and one of her original is Chataot, you would think that there is a Chata sitting in Leah's nest. Rambam says, don't worry about it. Each of you add a bird, sacrifice four, you sacrifice six, you both get credit for her and go home. So the Rambam does not change the circumstance. he changes the halacha in at least in my opinion, in an extremely way different than the way we would normally learn the Masechta. And again, the Rambam's approach to Kinim, as we saw already in the first parak, is entirely different. So, leave the Rambam. We're not going to have to come back to the Rambam again anymore in the second parak or the third parak. The Ravitz explanation, those of you who are interested, after we learn the third parak, you can come back and try to learn this Mishnah according to the circumstances of the third parak and see how the Ravitz explanation fits, I will tell you perfectly, with this Mishnah and the next Mishnah, but we're not going to come back. We're going to continue only under the assumption that we started with, that both losses accrue to Rachel. She has to add a second nest, keep it separate, and then sacrifice two and two and two and two. Now, the only thing we have to realize is what the Mishnah says, if the birds fly, that the worst they can do is have totally intermingled nests. And again, what does that really mean practically? In other words, lahalacha. Now the person comes, and they come to the Kohen, they said, our two nests, birds have been flying here forever. We now have four birds here and four birds here. What does the Kohen do? The normal interpretation, a usual interpretation, which we'll stay with, is the Kohen at that point says your nests are effectively intermingled. I'm going to intermingle them, and I'm going to sacrifice half and half. So the Kohen at that point intermingles the nests and sacrifices half and half. There are other possibilities as well. Again, we won't go into them. But basically, this is the standard interpretation, or the more usual interpretation, of this Mishnah. And realize that when we get to the next Mishnah, what we have to remember is the principle. The principle is, wherever the bird left, it and one other bird become pasul. So when we learn the next Mishnah, all I want you to keep in your head, I'll start tomorrow's shiur with exactly this, that the principle we've learned to this point, forget the Ravid, forget the Rambam, is Rachel loses two birds when a bird flies from her nest to Leah, and vice versa. The nest from which a bird escaped, loses the bird that escaped, and an additional bird. Using that principle, tomorrow we will deal with one of the more challenging Mishnayot, where birds fly between seven nests multiple times. 56 birds, I forgot how many flights, but it's a very complicated case. Again, we'll start reviewing the one principle, and we'll see how that principle applies to tomorrow's case.